You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to the giant brains of Viv Govender from the award-winning Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, I saw the US CPI data following yesterday's PPI data. The CPI came out this afternoon and the market started to not roar ahead, but steadily climb. And the commentary was, oh, these are really good numbers for an interest rate cut. Now, it rose from 2.7% year-on-year in July to 2.9% year-on-year in August, and the month-on-month was up as well. I don't see where the good comes in. To me, inflation went up. Am I wrong?
Well, this is the first – I mean, generally the Fed looks at inflation, but I think in this case they're going to look at the job numbers and the employment. And I think if you look there, even today, the claims was up quite considerably. In other words, more people are losing their jobs, making claims on unemployment. So I think this is, the dual mandate of full employment, and the other is price stability. So I think, you know what interested me is that I thought all I hear is, yes, there's a 25 point for September. I think that's in the market. But when I looked yesterday, it looks like there's more than one. You know, it could be up to three cuts this year in the market. Now, whether this is going to happen or not, we're going to hear next week what Mr. Powell says. But I must say there's growing views that this is imperative for Powell to bring down rates and to give the other market a little bit, or the other side of the economy, a little bit of a kick. You know, as Viv says, he's worried about the high levels of profits that he's making. You know, he feels he doesn't deserve it and he wants to give some back. So what I'm saying
is, we can't talk about Viv's personal life, David. This is for public consumption. But anyway, Viv's laughing.
What I'm trying to say, that's the other market. You know, the AI market, I mean, is just crazy. And we'll talk about Oracle in a few minutes' time.
Yes, we will. Larry Ellison, congratulations to him. At 81, he's the richest man in the world. I sent out a tweet. Actually, I wonder if you could measure who the poorest man in the world is. But Larry Ellison, would you rather be Larry Ellison or Elon Musk? I suppose Elon Musk has got a lot more time to spend his ill-gotten gains, hasn't he? Viv, you're agreeing with me. You'd rather be Musk rather than Ellison.
I mean, once you get to let's get to a few $100 million, the idea that you can reasonably spend that money, in a lifetime is ridiculous, because every year you're getting a few million dollars coming through just as, passive income. So when you have billions, I mean, it's really going to be a case of ego. $400 billion is an amount of money that in a year would generate over $10 billion just in normal returns, in interest returns, risk-free returns. So, yeah, you'd much rather be the younger person, whatever the person's name is. But with Larry Ellison, the interesting thing here is that he actually owns more Oracle now than when he started off when it was first listed, because of the fact that all the share buybacks. And that's been raising the amount that he owns in the company over time. And the interesting thing about this is that also we are seeing the impact of, the downstream things. So for instance, the most valuable company in the world is really really upstream. It's basically the guy that makes the chips. And then we have the people developing those chips and whatever downstream, which is AI companies OpenAI and so on. But also the cloud companies, because Oracle is basically getting this huge kick up because of the cloud demand that's coming through because of AI.
Okay. So there's our Larry Ellison chat. Go on, David.
Mr. Ellison has won the America's Cup.
Oh, he's a sailor, is he?
That's his hobby. Yacht racing, which can take up a few billion to build these machines. So I think he also fancies jets. I don't know what else, in fighter planes and that. So I think there are plenty of areas where he can actually spend and enjoy it.
Well, at least he does his on Earth rather than Mars, which is where Musk goes.
Well, it's not in space, but it is pretty high up.
Yeah, those yachts, those America's Cup yachts are extraordinary. There used to be a couple of chaps with ropes and canvas and everything, but now it's the – I mean, these are almost more sophisticated than a SpaceX rocket, these things. I don't know if you've seen them, Viv.
Yeah, but I say like even Davidson, a couple hundred million at most. Mm-hmm. So think of it this way: Larry Ellison at $400 billion, and if he gets even a 5% return, that's $20 billion basically of income coming in a year. It will take not even a week. Mm-hmm. For him to basically get more money than he could ever spend on the America's Cup. That is what I'm saying. When you have this kind of money, it's literally impossible to spend it. Every year you have another 20 billion in inverted commas problem to deal with in terms of more money coming in, forgetting about how much money he's making just with the stock price rising. So yeah, it's a ridiculous amount of money.
Viv, what you're going to do while I'm speaking to David briefly is work out the 400 billion at 5%. When does he become a trillionaire? That's a nice easy one for you.
With
compounding interest, when does he become a trillionaire? How many years will he become a trillionaire before he's 100? David, while Viv does that. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened on the JSE today? Because we had First Round and the shares shooting up. Mm. And we also had Discovery. Wow. Did you look at both of those?
I looked at them, yeah. There were two results out today. As you say, there was First Round and Discovery, which used to have a connection at some point of their existence. But, First, I couldn't see anything exceptional about First Round. It's good. It's a very solid result. Remember, I think they've got very good brands. I'm not a great supporter of the big banks, but they've got West Bank, they've got RMB, and they just produce very solid, steady profits. And, 10% is probably at the top side of where we could have expected them. But, it's a pretty decent earning. And why the market's responded the way it has, I'm not quite sure. I just, Lindsay, I just think markets are urging to go. And you can feel that they want to go. We've seen it with the gold shares, platinum shares, and I think it's coming down to those companies that underperformed. And your good friend, the very nice hedge fund manager, value fund manager, Mr. John Bickard, yes. I think could be right. I honestly, for whatever reason, I think that some of those companies that have been smashed down, despite the fact that the SA economy is battling along. It's really struggling. I think there's this kind of urge to push these share prices up. So, and it's in line with the rest of the world.
Interesting. I think headline earnings per share for First Round was up 10% or something. It was very pedestrian. But I think what happened was that they performed well despite the fact they had a tax problem, David. No, I don't want to talk about
tax.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's still there. And they made a provision for that. It may be, you know what? In fact, you've hit on a point that may be why the share price went in. And in other words, they've identified, okay, we're putting away X.
Yes, exactly.
Before it was open-ended. No one was quite sure how much this could cost them.
Yes.
This is the claim in the US, this motor claim, that might be a very valid reason that you've just brought up, that people, it's almost relief. Okay, we can move ahead. It's held us back in the past. We can identify how much they've set aside, which is likely the upper end of what a claim could be. Let's move ahead.
Yeah. Exactly. It reminds me of what a bookmaker said to me in Johannesburg when I first came to Johannesburg. And, it was very lax. You could run up an account and just pay when you could. And, of course, I ran up an account. Mm. And he said, Lindsay, it's been a month now. Pay and the pain goes away. And I always remember that. So that's what First Round are doing in a way as well. Viv, could it be a 50 basis point cut next Wednesday from Powell and his team? Because the last time that happened, actually it was quite recently. It was right at the end of the Biden administration. He cut 50 basis points then. And I think that people said that was politically motivated. Could there be a political 50 basis points from the Fed, Viv?
It's possible. I mean, just on First Round, I mean, the results are 10%. But I mean, look at the P ratio, 11. Look at the dividend yield, 5. Mm. A company growing at 10%, well, that is still cheap at that those ratios. Mm. But you're looking at the Powell's decision. I mean, did you guys see that million job miss?
911,000. That's 76,000 a month. That was quite startling. Go on, Viv.
Yeah. And so that means that basically, I mean, there was a term coined at the end of Biden's administration called the vibe session. And people are saying that the numbers look great, but people just don't feel happy. It turns out when you are given a choice between people's feelings and numbers, the people's feelings are usually right. And it appears that the U.S. economy was actually a lot weaker than people have been thinking, just because the official numbers were basically overstating how many jobs there were in the country. Like I said, 70,000 every month for like the last year, until March, basically, showing that the economy is, if the economy is that much weaker, then it kind of makes sense that if the Fed was thinking, you know, about cutting previously to these numbers coming out, they should be much more convinced to cut right now. And maybe, like you said, a 50 basis point cut in this scenario might even be justified.
Hmm. Okay, well, we'll wait and see. Just before we go to the numbers, I want to talk about the assassination of Charlie Kirk last night, because it was around about 9 o'clock. And as soon as it came up and said they don't know what his condition is, I knew he was dead. And the blame game has started. Who started what? Who was? We've got to stop this rhetoric, and it all started with this person. That means nothing. What it does show, and David, you're going to the States next week. It shows a desperately and disastrously divided nation, and it's quite dangerous, isn't it?
Totally. You know, when it came out and I saw it, and I actually saw a video, which is really of him being shot. Someone was taking a picture, and you just see the bullet hit his neck, and you see the blood spurt out. Yeah. You know, it's something that they couldn't even do in the movies. And it is really frightening. But, you know, you bring it up. This is a divided nation. And where you have a divided nation like this, where the rhetoric is so angry and so bitter, you're going to get individuals acting this way, you know, because they come frustrated that they can't get their way. I think they exercise their anger. And this is not groups. These are individuals. They exercise this anger, you know, by extreme measures, which is like assassinations. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, I think they will occur in a country that is kind of polarized or fragmented. So, and you know, to be honest, the man at the top is not exactly an angel. You know, he's not the man. He himself is a man who creates or has created a lot of division within the population on both sides.
Yes.
So it's not only you're not only getting extreme right, right wing violence. You're getting it on the left as well.
Well, we assume it was on the left, but yes, it could have been.
It identifies, you know, where America is. And the strangest thing is that today it's 9/11, hey?
Yeah.
And this was the last act where actually people felt unified. You know, they felt American. It lifted their spirits. It made them very, you know, bipartisan. Everybody was in the same boat. And it's so strange that it's come. And here you are 24 later. You've got a completely divided country. Mm. Anyway, I just feel very bitter, angry about it, and very sorry, you know, certainly that this is the way that people are venting their frustrations.
Maybe it'll be one of those things where people say, right, that's enough now. Let's tone it down on social media. I mean, that woman that we follow occasionally, David, JoJo from Jers, I mean, she's funny and everything, but down there she deeply, deeply hates a Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And that does come across. Maybe people like her on the left, and, you know, people like James Woods, the actor on the right, have got to stop now. Viv, you can come in here, looking at this.
I mean, I saw a video, and it's quite sad because I've got a daughter the same age, and he's a video of his daughter running up to him, like, you know, at some previous point, you know, not a bit at that day, and calling her daddy and stuff. And then apparently she was at the event, or his family was at the event.
Oh, no.
And so I just think to myself, you know, it's a person with a kid, a very young child, a 3-year-old, and I think another a younger child as well. And then from just that pure point of view, it's, you know, these people, you know, that are killed. But what I do have to say is that, you know, the U.S. has a history of this. I mean, people forget how dangerous the 60s were. You killed the president, you killed the president's brother, you killed the number one civil rights leader in the country, you killed his number two as well, Malcolm X. You talk about murders were happening all the time, multiple bombings. The U.S. has a very a violent kind of streak through it. I mean, something you don't see in many other countries. I mean, you might have seen that in the UK with, like, you know, the IRA, but you're not seeing the Tories and the Labour Party going at each other like that. But the US, you might be seeing something like that happen. And the danger here is that normally in these situations, you have people in charge that are going to tamper things down. Remember when Barack Obama had that whole kind of thoughts and prayers kind of stuff happening when madman killed a whole bunch of people in a black church? Trump is not doing that. Trump is saying, you know, we're going to go after the people that did this. And he's ramping things up. And, you know, my fear is that, you know, we know Trump will push things when the economy, when things are going against him. We see an economy that's weak at the moment. It'd be a very easy thing for him to do to try and push forward. You know, we're under threat. It's a dangerous kind of environment. If the economy is suffering and that kind of stuff. And that is the fear I have at the moment. It's that, you know, he's going to be using this not as a case of, you know, come together.
Clamp down.
He's going to use this. Imagine if George Bush used it as a political event. And basically went after his enemies and said it was the Democrats that let all these, you know, foreigners into the country around 9/11. It could be a very different country at the moment. And I think, unfortunately, Trump's going to do something like that.
Oh, gosh. Well, I hope not. Okay, let's move on to things that we can try and understand, and that's the markets, where the dollar rand is 17.41. The rand really is doing so well. And I had an interview yesterday with somebody who's in the bond market, and the South African bond market, if you look at it compared to its developed market peers, has done so well. For example, well, I'll come to that in a second, the 10-year. But let's carry on with the currencies. British pound against the rand, 23.63. The euro rand is 20.44. Euro dollar, 1.1740. That is a euro that is a percent higher in 24 hours. British pound against the US dollar, 1.3575. The pound up 1.2%. Gold price is 36.37, which is down slightly. The platinum price is flat at 13.98. And palladium, which had a really good day yesterday, has had another good day today. 12.32, up $20 or 1.6%. Now, other commodities, and I'm adding copper, gentlemen, to the normal just crude oil, apart from the precious metals, because of what Harmony has done, and also, more importantly, the Teck and Anglo merger, which is all about copper. But we've got West Texas crude at $62.57, down 1.7%. Brent crude oil at $66.52, down 1.4%. And the copper price is up 0.9% in New York. This is dollars per pound on the commodity exchange in New York, 4.583, which is, as I say, it's close to 1% up. So it's 4.58 and doing rather nicely. What else we got? We got the US 10-year Treasury bond, which is just about to break 4%, 4.003 at the moment, another 2.5 basis points down on the yield, and that's after the CPI data and the jobs data today. The South African 10-year, 5 months ago, almost to the day, this was 11.08, I think it was. It's now 9.38, another 10 basis points down. The strength of the rand, the strength of the bond markets overseas. This is an extraordinary performance. It's like 170 basis points in 5 months. If you'd have been long of that, well done to you. S&P 500 futures, 65.83, up 0.7%, close to all-time record highs. In fact, they are all-time record highs. And the Bitcoin price also doing very well indeed, 114,500 plus a little bit of change. So, David, things going well. This is an extraordinary bull market, isn't it? It just keeps on going.
I know. And, it could continue for some time. One does get a little nervous, but you can feel the momentum, you know, building up and ready to go. And a lot depends on what Powell says. But if he says the right thing and he moves towards reducing rates, then, you know, this can continue and can broaden out. The one thing, this is still very much an AI market. I use AI in a much broader sense. It's still driven by, 20 odd tech companies or maybe a little more, some of the smaller ones. We haven't quite seen it migrate or, go into other areas of the market. So For the first time actually today with the CPI, I have seen companies like Walmart and JP Morgan, Visa and those companies, Costco and that pick up as well. But I think that's on, you know, that's starting to now reflect lower rates. But look, this, you know, after Oracle's numbers yesterday, where I have never in my life seen a company of that magnitude. You know, this wasn't a small company put on 40%. It wasn't as though it was at the bottom end of the market. Oh. This was already had a very high cap. You know, it was in maybe the top 20 shares on the S&P. And I was just absolutely astonished. But what, and I'd love Viv's view on this, because when you look at what they're saying, the amount of money that's going to be spent on their cloud, you know, it's an astonishing outlook. And I think that has given the AI market or the technology market just another boost, another lift.
Viv, that's your invitation.
Yeah, look, I mean, it kind of makes sense. If you're going to have a $4.5 trillion company making the chips, the guys that are going to be buying the chips have to make more money than that. You know what I mean? And then the guys that are going to be using these clouds and stuff have to make more money than that. We need to start seeing huge, huge GDP increases to justify these things here. And the fact that we are seeing demand coming through as strongly as we are for cloud gives me some hope that we are going to be seeing, you know, these things coming through. And it also makes me wonder as well, you know, if you look at why did the jobs numbers miss that much? Because the jobs numbers are a sample. Samples only work when the underlying entity has not changed. You know what I mean? So if you take a sample of something, it correlates with the state of the underlying entity. But if the underlying entity has changed in some fundamental way, samples no longer give you the same kind of, you know, accuracy. And it makes me wonder whether or not the U.S. economy is changing so dramatically in a way that sampling is no longer working as well, because the underlying economy has changed fundamentally. And I think that could be something else, also indicating that AI may be feeding into the economy faster than people have been anticipating.
Does it also tell you that there's a lot of money going into mutual funds in the United States in order to fuel this market? Because where's the market coming from? Viv, stay with you on this one. What do you think?
No, but I mean, the mutual funds aren't buying Oracle's, you know, tools, cloud, you know, services. You know what I mean? So there is actually something happening there. There is actually some, you know, underlying demand coming through that Oracle thinks that it's going to be seeing this huge kind of, you know, cloud demand at the moment. So I do think that there is something happening. I mean, businesses, maybe they are overdoing it. Maybe it's dot-com bust part two. But at the moment, it does appear that there is some kind of, like, use case out there that businesses are seeing, or someone is seeing, that they want to be using Oracle's cloud to basically utilize AI.
Well, anyway, it's all going to fall in a heap when the electricity gets turned off, because your companies that you're both invested in are using far too much electricity. And I saw a chap at the World Economic Forum on their website, and he came up with a very plausible argument as to why that they're going to go into space and put these giant solar panels and beam it back down to Earth, and that will solve the problem, because there's not enough space on Earth to put the power facilities in order to power AI. So that's solved. Okay. On the JSE today, the first Rand share price was the top performer of the top shares, 6.1% higher. African Rainbow Minerals up 3%, Life Healthcare up 2.6%, and AVI up 2.3%. On the downside, this is extraordinary, because, David, we spoke about Discovery after their trading update the other day. Yeah. And the trading update was really good, and the share price jumped 10% or something like that. Well, it's fallen around 10%. In fact, it's fallen on the results 9.25%. So what are they seeing in the results that weren't in the trading update? And there's miscommunication there from their PR company. And I think that's very naughty or remiss of them. Go on.
I was one who was captivated by the trading update, particularly what they were doing in the UK. But they do say now that I hate the word headwinds, but they use the word headwinds. They're finding both headwinds in China and in the UK, and this is where the growth came. If you look at the local business, things are down. You know, in other words, they're not selling as many policies now as they did, or the growth in policies is beginning to slow down considerably. So what they call their premium income, their annualized premium income, and that's starting to come down. So when you look at their health, life, invest, and insure, all of those are slowing down, even though the numbers were good. I think that scared, you know, that scared people. But new business volumes, we see it in all the insurers, are very, very difficult to, to grow in an environment which you point out is not growing. The other one is that the bank's still chewing cash, you know, another 68 million rand loss or something. I don't know what the exact number was. So I was disappointed. I was quite optimistic for the first time in a long time when I saw the update. But when you dig down into the numbers, I think there are a few obstacles that they have to get through.
To me, that bank was an ego-driven folly. But anyway, that's just me. Anyway, other companies not doing so well. Tungela down 6.25%, Bytes down nearly 4%, Pan African Resources down 2.5%, and Northam's down 2.1%. Okay, before we go to the indices, I've got to ask you a question, you two. And Viv, I'll start with you on this one. A friend of mine phoned me up today and she said, my company's issued what they call a code red. They've already been cutting back, this company. It's a giant global conglomerate. The share price has been doing horribly over the year, bucking the bull market trend. They've now issued a code red. They're forcing people to come back to work 4 days a week. I think trying to put people off and saying, okay, I'll leave, because they want to cut costs. And even silly things like 50 euros a month that they would give out as fitness benefits. You know, if you can prove that you've improved your fitness via your app on your watch or something, you get this 50 euro voucher from a shop and things. That's all gone, all benefits gone. 4 days a week, come back into the office, code red, and we're cutting back in all our European centres. Would you say that's good? So I must have a look at this share price because they're getting rid of the fat and therefore it'll go up. Or would you say this is a death knell for this company? Viv, what would you say? Are you an optimist or a pessimist?
A company like that, I'd be a pessimist. I mean, you know, I like a company that has growing revenue, not a company that's trying to make, you know, to improve by cutting costs. Unless it's something like, you know, Meta, where you're basically spending tens of billions of dollars on a thing that only Mark Zuckerberg producing. Stop cutting your nose off, and therefore you'll basically feel a lot better.
Okay. That's a sell from Viv. David, yeah. I tend to think, sorry, Viv, you're breaking up a little bit there. I didn't mean to interrupt. David, I think you're a pessimist with Viv on this one.
I'm very happy at home. I love to go into the office. I go in there. The problem is that I do about a tenth of the work, and I'm far more efficient at home than I am in the office. I realize that. I'm being selfish because I'm not passing. I'm not communicating with young people and not mentoring them and so on. It's time to do that. But I'm enjoying home, and I promise you, Lindsay, I'm 100% more efficient than. Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration at my age. But I mean, even now, here you are. You know, instead of going home now, I'm going to, as we come off the conversation, I'm going to just go through a few points and finish off, and I'll be finished in about 6:30 or something, and then that's it. You know, whereas I would never do that at the office.
Okay. Well, thanks for your domestic arrangements. But what I was really asking was, would you be a buyer or a seller of the company I just described? You're a seller as well.
Seller.
Okay.
Sorry for that long-winded.
No, I enjoyed it. I've got this lovely picture in my mind now of you sitting down and doing a few points and going off for a run or something, getting a takeaway, whatever it is. But very nice. Thank you. Okay. So we've got two sellers on this one. I'll send you the chart of the company. Sorry, go on.
David says that he's more efficient, but the point about him like passing on knowledge, I would bet the amount of value David adds by being in the office and just like, you know, shooting the breeze with the young people is quite vast, actually. Imagine the experience these guys are getting by talking to him and understanding the history of the market, etc.
Yeah.
And it may seem like intangible, but I mean, that is why the company, like, it has a future. It's because of that tradition of passing information. Mm-hmm. And being at home, you do your own KPIs, yes. But the benefit to the company that they lose out for not having you actually, you know, just passing information, it's going to be quite large. And you joke about it.
The youngsters are boring today, Viv. Hey, Lindsay.
Oh, God, I can't stand the... I really can't stand young people. And it's obviously because we're getting old, but I can't stand them. They're not the same people that we were, David. I don't know about Viv. He's a dark horse. But yeah, I agree with you. They're terribly boring. But Viv makes a very good point. They should wheel out old people like you occasionally to come in and have a chat and say things like, I remember in the old days we used to do this and this, this. And I am being facetious, of course, but it is terribly interesting. I mean, that's why I love talking to you. We do it twice a week. And usually I learn something. There's some wisdom there.
You know, Lindsay, you go to everybody's going to the Coldplay concert. They don't even know who Coldplay is. They don't even know who Oasis is. So I say, why do you want to go to the concert? You don't even know who these people are.
Mm. You know? Yeah, it's very true.
I listen to them on Spotify, anyway.
I stopped going to my hairdresser because the drivel that she comes out with. Just to shut her up, I said, I'd say something like, did you hear about Charlie Kirk? And she'll say, "Who's that? Who is he? Is he with Coldplay, or is he the drummer in Watson?" No, it's the youth of today. I fear for the future. David, closing indices, please.
Talking so much, my computer is logged out.
Even your computer turned off. Okay. Well, look, I can help a little bit. Is it on again now? Yeah, because it was a good day on the JSE, despite the fact that the commodities were down. Go on.
You mentioned resources were down. There was a little bit of easing off there. Nothing serious. The resource index down 0.7%. The overall index up a third of a percent, 103.927. I don't know whether this is new records. I think we're making it every day. Financial strong, I think, picked up with First Rand lifting the index. It has a big weight in the banking index. And, industrial's pretty strong as well. That's despite the Rand improving, which takes some of the edge off. The other one we must watch is I see property going up every day.
Yeah.
Every day that property market is improving as those rates come down. You mentioned the long rate coming down. As that come down, it makes some of the property companies a lot more attractive, even though they're still battling along at the moment.
Growth numbers came out yesterday, of course. Yes. Mm. Okay. So, and the overall indices were what, please, David, on the close?
So the All Share Index was at 103.927. That was up a third of a percent. The top 40, 96.529, also up 0.3%.
Very good. So, okay.
Volumes are down. Mm. Yeah, volumes have been very high. That Valterra deal, the Anglo-American getting out of their their holding. Those shares have been circulating and trading up and down all over the place and have picked up, made volumes up pretty high. Again, even if you look now, Goldfields, First Rand, Anglo Gold, Naspers, Valterra are all the main traders. It wasn't as big as it has been, but the volumes have been pretty brisk.
Very good. Okay, it'll be quiet until next week. Oh, next week, you know what? I've got it. I'm not here next week, so we'll take a break, and it'll be the week after that we resume, and the world will be a different place then. I can promise you that. David, thank you very much for your time. David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities. Viv from Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.